what I had just told you is that in the Ray case, as in the John Kennedy assassination, I tried to replace the non-existent lawyer because there was no trial. There are different reasons in each case why there was no trial. And all of my writing and all of my investigating and all of my analysis is to this end. And I do engage in more analysis than most other people because I was a professional one in intelligence. And I find that a good analysis not only can give you answers, but it can save you an enormous amount of work, and it can tell you where to go to investigate. Mm-hmm. So while for years I used to say I'm an analyst, not an investigator, when I had to go out in the field and investigate again, and this is where I began in the 30s for the Senate, I found that my work was quite productive. Mm-hmm. In the Ray case and in the John Kennedy case. Now in the Ray case, although I am his investigator, my capability for investigating was quite limited. Every one of the investigations I conducted in the field was incidental to something else that paid the expenses.
Yeah.
Now you've asked me to distinguish between what I have in frame up, in which I merely tear the case apart,
right,
and what my work convinces me happened in the King case.
Mm-hmm.
Now here, subject to later discussion of what you want to use, because remember, I do have this one hat as Ray's investigator, and we are hoping to get into court.
Sure.
I will tell you in confidence, but that does not mean all of it has to be in confidence. If you decide you want to use some of it, you let me know, and then if I have a question, I'll take it up with you.
Okay. I'll tell you what probably would happen. I mean, this is premature, but when you tell me something that I'm really interested in, then I'm going to go, you know, start looking around, and whenever, you know, we're going to start an investigation of our own.
I know that. That confronts me with another one of my problems. Somebody is dealing with me for a movie on my work, and while I think they're trying to rip it off, remember, I have done all of this without any pay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I am not anxious to give my work away.
Sure, okay. Okay, that is a problem for us, too. Basically, you know, we're going after this as a journalistic venture to try and find out, and you are an expert.
Well, they hired that whore, Ralph Schoenemann, to be a consultant where he's done no work on the John Kennedy case. They can hire me as a consultant and let the literary rights rest with me. I'll give them all my work.
Who's Schoenemann?
Oh, he's an awful person. He used to be connected with the Russell Foundation. He's the major cause for all the diversion used by the Rockefeller Commission and its diversion to justify Ford's and Bell's previous careers.
Mm-hmm. I don't know who Schoenemann is. I don't know who Schoenemann is.
You're just as lucky.
Okay.
But they did hire him on the JFK part of your project as a consultant when he is one person who's done no work at all.
Yeah,
CBS. You belong to a big bureaucracy.
I know I belong to a big... No, I'm just thinking of... I have never heard that name. I don't know that his that he's involved in this project. I know...
Not your part.
Okay, fine. But what happened was for 60 minutes, there was a guy knocking around the country for a couple of months, I think, and then he's not doing it anymore. Now, he may be the Schoenemann connection, but it's not our story. You know, it's moved over within the company.
Well, I know 60
minutes. Okay, whatever it is.
I know 60 Minutes was working on JFK, too, but the part of which I know was an entirely different approach than the stuff Schoenemann is working on. Several of the people asked me, can I trust these people?
Mm-hmm.
Because they were trying to bypass me in the work I did, and I made no effort to frustrate them.
Mm-hmm.
I also told somebody else at CBS that they were taking an unproductive line.
Mm-hmm.
That they would find out they were going to junk it, and I understand they did.
Okay. If you tell me that, if I get three or four non-productive lines that I don't take, you know, that I don't go after in today's meeting, then it's worth my while. Yeah.
That's one of the reasons I want to be forthright with
okay.
you, but I don't want to give away any of my rights, and I don't want to have either one of us lined up with a conflict of interest.
Okay.
So that's why I'll tell you my reconstruction of the actual crime, with all the details you want,
mm-hmm.
including proofs,
mm-hmm.
but it has to be off the record and remain my property. I've done all this work.
Okay.
Now, it's the simplest thing in the world, and even though there's a minor industry in this field, they're ripping me off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you example after example. The current issue of the Tatler has something they refuse to buy from me.
Mm-hmm.
They bought my books in December. We just got the check for them yesterday. They have it on the front pages. They're on Sensational Investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing happened with Rolling Stone when they have their own kind of McKismo.
Mm-hmm.
Bob Kaiser.
Okay.
It happens all the time. There are very few people doing any real work in this system.
Yeah, okay, I know that. And that's one of the problems we have, is we come in obviously late to cover a story. And, you know, the reason I go to Jim and the reason I come to you is not essentially to rip off, but I'm also not out to buy someone's work and put it together.
I understand that.
Yeah, so, and I don't know where we go from here.
Well,
on this.
It is not your decision to make.
Absolutely.
The only thing I'm asking you, I think maybe you can decide on, is when I specify these things, can you keep them in confidence? Because if you don't, all you got to do is go out and reproduce everything I've done. That becomes a simple matter. I'll be telling you what witnesses will testify to what when I saw them, and
right.
all of that.
Uh-huh.
And
okay, we have an interest, and I have an interest in getting the best possible presentation of the Ray case before the American people, which you and I now feel has not been told.
That's right.
I obviously want the best thinking around on the subject to steer me, because me coming in reinventing the wheel is from scratch. I'm just trying to think of what would not be in so much of your private property area that you could share with me, because, you know, I obviously can't make a deal with you for what you know and say.
Well, I'm not asking you to do that. If CBS wants to do that, that's a separate thing, and I would
right.
welcome it.
Right, okay.
Now, all I'm asking is, at least for the time being, the preservation of confidence.
Sure.
Remember, I told you to begin with, that if what I tell you in confidence is something you want to use, then ask me.
Fine, all right, let's stop talking in the abstract then. Let's get to something and say and work that's out right. how the I would deal with it, how you would.
The only thing I want to do is protect my rights in this and to preserve everybody's integrity.
Correct.
Remember, I do have a responsibility to Ray, and I do
absolutely.
Have a responsibility to Jim. I regard Jim as a father regards a son.
Sure, okay.
I think he's great, and I don't want to do anything that can complicate his life.
Fine. Okay.
You see, I've seen Jim develop in this as few men have a chance to see anybody else develop.
Mm-hmm.
And off the record, I'll tell you something about Jim
mm-hmm.
and me. Don't even tell him.
Okay.
It's not because he'll misunderstand it. Jim was depending too much on me.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew the people involved in this case. And here you have Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Who began working on the case when he hadn't even taken his District of Columbia bars.
Mm-hmm.
And Bud wasn't doing any work. Jim did the work.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he had no basis for confidence in his own legal ability. He, meanwhile, developed a basis and confidence in my word and my judgment. So it got to the point where he would never do anything without calling me up.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that made up my mind on this was when he faced a very bad situation in deposing Percy Forman. I was supposed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
The only way I could be there would be if Bud paid my expenses. Bud didn't do it, so I couldn't be there. And Jim called me up 2:00 in the morning before he's going to depose Forman. Then when we got to Memphis on discovery,
mm-hmm.
We worked together without being able to plan it in advance. We had to work spontaneously. And then we got into the courtroom, and I knew it all fell on Jim. So increasingly, I stayed out of his decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And now he goes entirely on his own. He does fine.
Yeah.
But this was a very painful thing for me to do, and I felt uneasy about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hasn't had the chance to draw on 62 years of experience.
Sure.
So this tells you something about Jim.
Right.
And how he's come along magnificently.
Oh, yeah.
Great.
He's handling your freedom of information.
Pardon me?
He's handling your freedom of information, isn't he?
Yeah. On the crime itself.
Bears outlines.
Ray was involved with the criminal organization. Mm-hmm. I think I can pinpoint.
Okay.
They were keeping him on ice quite clearly.
Mm-hmm.
They kept him in a style better than that to which he was accustomed. for a period of something more than a year, on which they had him do only a few criminal things at the beginning, merely to test him. And as I understand the way the underworld works, I believe also to be in a position to take care of him should he at any time become a liability. He brought heroin in from Canada. I have his entire account of that on tape. And he almost got caught. Mm-hmm. And
he alludes to that even in the Huey stories.
Yes.
Bringing small packages. Yes,
yeah,
so
but he doesn't
say what it was.
Story.
Right, okay.
It was
fine.
Heroin.
Okay, I mean, I had a French, a small package like
yeah.
that. It could be gold.
No, he told me it was
heavy.
About a kilo. He gave me an estimate of its value that I think was probably a little bit inflated. He told me the whole mechanism of the whole thing. And obviously, this is something I don't want to charge with another crime.
Sure, okay.
He passed that test.
Mm-hmm.
The thing that is unique about James Earl Ray, well, many things are unique
mm-hmm.
about him, is he doesn't ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
He gets involved in something, he's told to do it, he does it.
Yeah.
There's another thing that's unique about all the Rays. They're strong-willed, and given a chance, given a choice,
mm-hmm.
they will very often make their own decision. And there's another thing that I found as characteristic, especially of Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Lyndon Johnson's joke about Jerry Ford chewing gum and walking. I drove to Brushy Mountain 3 times with Jerry Ray from the motel at the airport in Nashville. That meant 6 trips.
Mm-hmm.
Jerry had made the trip very often and knew how to make it. If we talked, he wouldn't turn for anything, just keep on driving straight. We wasted hours that way, and I finally had to become the navigator. Now, this is a characteristic.
Right. Where's Jerry right now?
Near Chicago.
Okay.
Do
you have a number for him, which I can have while
you're there? I have a post office box.
Okay,
I think
okay, fine.
I can tell you a reporter who probably knows his number, a friend of mine in Chicago,
okay.
Larry Finley of the Chicago Daily News.
Okay.
Jerry has no number of his own. He lives in and is a night watchman at a golf club, country club at Lake Zurich, Illinois.
Okay.
So, after this, Jimmy committed a very unusual and apparently very petty crime for these people.
Mm-hmm.
He smuggled a mounted tire into Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have a full description from him on tape of all of the details of it. You understand these are not clandestine tapes, and they were made with the permission of the warden.
Oh, yeah, I trust him.
And Jimmy could at any time turn the tape recorder off. Now, I know the point at which there was a rendezvous and all of that, but I don't think that's essential to your purposes.
No.
Now, if I may be rhetorical, ask yourself, what is worth more money in Mexico than in the United States? It's not jewelry, which Percy Foreman alleged.
Right.
It's not heroin.
No, it comes in.
And has to be small, so that it can fit inside of a mounted spare tire. There's only one thing, Esther.
Okay, I'm new to this thing.
Hot paper, of any kind, hot paper.
Uh-huh.
Hello? Yeah. Fine, Rod, how are you?
Machine.
Hold on a second, Rod. Where were we? I've forgotten.
Okay. We were talking about Jerry Ray, and we're talking about hot paper.
Yes. Now, you have these kinds of hot paper. You've got stolen things.
Stolen securities is what I was
You've
thinking.
Also got counterfeit,
mm-hmm.
like securities and traveler's
right.
checks. And then you've got such things as skim. Good, solid, substantial, crooked money.
Oh, okay. That's to
you
be
got
laundered.
A whole variety.
Money to be laundered.
Money laundered too, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And then people want to get it out of the country.
Mm-hmm.
So there are various kinds of hot paper. And Ray has no idea what was in the tire. My analysis tells me it has to have been hot paper.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been tracing the possibilities. One of the things I discovered is that far and away, the most costly single crime in the country as I remember it from Patrick Ray's statistics, more than twice as costly as any other crime is hot paper.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have some limitation on the criminal group with which Ray was in association. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure he can identify people, not by real names.
Mm-hmm.
And whether or not they were wearing disguises, I have no way of knowing.
Yeah.
They were in both heroin and hot paper.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as I figure this out, let me seem to digress.
Sure.
And I ask myself the lawyer's question, qui bono?
Mm-hmm.
Who wanted King killed? Why at this time, and not earlier, when he for so long was considered an uppity nigger who ought to be done in?
Mm-hmm.
There is nothing in the crime to indicate that the people who committed it had any personal interest in it.
Mm-hmm.
It has all the earmarks of a contract job.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to have involved these people with whom Ray had a criminal association. They were the only people who could set him up. And I have all the details of how they actually set him up.
Mm-hmm.
And when. So they did.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't go into it in frame up. I don't remember, maybe I did. But the original weapon he bought at Aeromarine
mm-hmm.
was a much better assassination weapon than the 30-06. Did I go into that?
Yeah, it's in the book.
Okay.
I mean, I learned it. It's in my head. There's only one place it could have come from, and that's in your book.
Okay.
Yeah, you discussed the trajectory. And
that's right.
That's why I got that much.
Now, the reason it was switched, obviously, is for what I suggest in the book.
Which is to leave a trail.
Because
to leave a trail and be noticed.
Well, also to coincide, because one was stolen nearby.
Uh-huh, okay.
Of 30-06 caliber.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'll be jumping ahead a bit,
mm-hmm.
but I want you to understand this. One of the things I did was to make a study of the characteristics of the ammunition, and you saw that in the frame-up.
Mm-hmm.
The manufacturer's own catalog
mm-hmm.
shows what you can expect of this ammunition air for an impact. So I was certain.
Okay, then we have to wait for the air conditioning man's call. Then I will go anyplace. Okay, we were off on the rifle.
Now, I was certain that an identifiable remnant would remain.
Mm-hmm.
The coroner committed perjury, or medical examiner committed perjury in the evidentiary hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I have absolutely no doubt about that. However,
the chief medical examiner then?
Jerry Thomas Francisco.
Francisco, right. Is he still coroner then?
They call him medical examiner,
yeah.
And yes,
uh-huh.
as of November.
Okay.
Now, there was a reason for it. And I go into this in
mm-hmm.
frame up. The bullet was true to its design.
Mm-hmm.
It did mushroom and fragment.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused a second wound.
Okay.
So they wanted to hide all of this because they wanted to be able to say they examined the bullet.
Okay, now let me ask you something right now.
Because
this is one of the parts I found difficult in the book and I read over it. You're not suggesting a second shot because of
no.
that one wound that they're hitting. That they're hiding, because you talked about one at the neck, and then the one that they talked about
in the jaw.
In the jaw, okay. Which
it's all one.
Okay, fine. You're talking about that's what I wasn't clear
the
about.
The bullet fragment.
You see, okay, in a fragment, which is what it was designed to do.
That's right. It will mushroom and it will fragment, and if it hits bone, the chances are it will fragment.
And that's what it did. So you're
and
suggesting
that's what it
did hit bone, even
that's
though they
right.
never. Okay.
And he swore falsely that this was a surgical wound.
Which means clean?
Created in the course of surgery on King at the hospital.
The one in the throat?
The one in the throat.
Okay.
His own autopsy, which I have, and I got it by a Freedom of Information suit,
mm-hmm.
says otherwise. And Jim got a tape of a public appearance by him,
mm-hmm.
in which he gives still a third version, that it was enlarged by surgery.
Okay, so the versions of it are
three different ones.
But from
that
him,
there was no wound caused by the bullet in the throat, that there was a wound caused
by... Where did he testify to that? That there was nothing in the throat?
No wound in the throat. In the evidentiary hearing, he said it was all surgical. Now, I was not in the courtroom when that happened because of the unusual...
But he had come up with three versions.
Francisco
himself, fine, okay.
Yes. I have one of them on tape that Jim has, a videotape that he prepared himself.
Mm-hmm.
One in the autopsy, which I have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, until we could exercise discovery, we did not get to see that remnant of the bullet.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you one other thing, because I'm still... The ballistics part, I went through the book fastest, and we drew the pictures, trajectories and stuff. I was completely on a clip, and I was going to come back to it. Okay, the three versions again. Only surgical. He talked about a swallow.
Well, let me put it a different way.
Okay.
The version in the evidentiary hearing is that there was a single gunshot wound to the jaw.
Okay.
And that the wound in the neck was caused by surgery only.
Okay.
The version in the autopsy is that both wounds were caused by the gunshot.
Oh, I see. And the autopsy talks about...
And then the version that he prepared on tape for a professional symposium is that the throat wound was enlarged by surgery.
Got it. Now, why is it in their interest to lie about what that bullet did?
Because without that bullet, they can't connect Ray to the crime.
Clear?
Well, let me explain what I did next, and maybe that will clarify.
Okay, fine. All right, let you go. Your way. All right.
When I got to see this remnant of the bullet, when Jim and I were exercising discovery, and the state was watching us very carefully, they were harassing us like you can't imagine.
Mm-hmm.
I decided to try a little bit of intellecto judo on them. Mm-hmm. So I held it in my hand, and I gave elaborate explanations to Jim of everything except one thing. That this clearly was an identifiable bullet. By that I mean that the remnant was sufficiently clear so that you could make a positive or a negative relationship to the rifle allegedly used in the crime.
Right.
Now, quite separately, I have absolutely irrefutable proof of two things. That rifle could not have been used in the crime, and that all officials knew it and deliberately framed Ray.
Okay.
And I think this becomes an exciting story.
Sure.
I had that figured out immediately. I knew that that particular witness would not talk to me on tape. So I got Jim up early in the morning, and I walked down to see that witness, and I killed 2 hours earning his confidence and asked him to confirm one thing he had said, and that he would do. And that was part of the proof of this. So once... I had leaned on the state this way, hoping that they would opt out, hoping that they would understand that I was onto the fakery and what it could involve, because there had been swearing to this. Remember, in frame-up, I had this one paragraph for Fraser's affidavit that I also got in the Freedom of Information suit. He said, I have examined a bullet. He did not examine a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
He examined a minor fragment of a bullet.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about deformity. It isn't deformity, there's mutilation.
Okay, again, we're getting to an area that I had difficulty with, and I read several times to make sure I could ask reasonably intelligent questions. Are those distinctions significant?
Tremendously. First of all, he did not examine a bullet. He examined only a fragment of a bullet.
Okay,
and
so let me stop you for 1 second. So what you're suggesting here is there's a fragment and then there's another sizable, identifiable chunk.
No, that is the fragment. The rest of it disappeared. I can show you pictures of them searching for it even in the dark.
Okay.
The rest of the bullet disappeared. I don't think they have it. Maybe they do.
Okay, but that's what bullets do.
That's what bullets do.
Yeah, okay.
This is one reason why military ammunition is designed in a different way to prevent that. That's a humanitarian concept. This was hunting ammunition, and you have a different concept than hunting and environment. And you want it to be lethal.
Okay.
And that requires deformity.
Okay,
and
fine. So he looked at a fragment.
So he looked at only a fragment. Mm-hmm. As soon as I looked at that fragment with the naked eye, without being a ballistics expert, it is so clean and so clear. And again, this is the design of the bullet.
Mm-hmm.
That I was certain a competent criminalist would be able to testify to this.
Mm-hmm.
And it is I who arranged by telephone with Herb McDonald to be our expert.
Uh-huh.
I got from him the name of the second independent expert. Now, you remember, McDonald had seen nothing.
Right.
This was all in the clear, all on the up and up.
Mm-hmm.
We were running what you might consider to be a great risk, proving their case.
Right.
But we knew
could prove it that easily, they might have proved it.
I knew that they couldn't prove their case, Esther. I wouldn't have taken the chance.
Sure.
I told you about the independent evidence I had. I'd forgotten the name of the other expert, but Bud wouldn't go for it. So what actually happened is that one night, I started writing the questioning of five witnesses who were not known to the lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
At 11:20. I finished it about 4 o'clock in the morning. I had a nap and a shower, and I woke Bud up and handed him the questions, and then I went off to do other work. The first thing, if nothing else, I went to see Ray as soon as he got into the marshal's jail
mm-hmm.
to spend time with him. That particular day is the day that Jim had to question some of these witnesses, including the medical examiner, and that's the day that McDonald was coming in. The minute McDonald came in, I had to take McDonald down to the clerk of the court to examine this stuff.
He's got the fragment, he's got the rifle, he's got the windowsill.
He did not have the rifle. They would not let us test fire the rifle.
Okay, but I mean, is that what I'm now looking for?
What I had McDonald there for was two things, and they're both in frame-up.
Yes.
The windowsill, which is a fantastic foolishness,
right.
And the remnant of bullet.
Okay.
Because you see, if this bullet
mm-hmm.
remnant is identifiable with a rifle,
sure.
And if it does not identify with the so-called fatal rifle, Ray is exculpated.
Right, right. That's clearly it. No, I was just asking now for an informational question. When I go to that clerk of the criminal court, Bubba whatever his name is.
Bubba Blackwell.
Bubba Blackwell. Does he have the rifle in?
Oh, yes.
And he's got the bullet remnant, and he's got...
Well, you won't be able to get to the bullet remnant, but you will be able to get to the rifle, because the bullet remnant is sequestered by court order. I got it only as Ray's investigator.
I see.
I couldn't get it earlier.
Right.
We had to get a discovery order served on him.
Right.
Issued by the judge to get to see this evidence.
Right. And we have no right.
No, as a matter of fact, it would be wrong. However, this is an interesting quirk. It does not cover the rifle. You can see the rifle.
Why is that?
I don't know how it happened in the guilty plea hearing, but that's the way it happened. Bubba Blackwell told me. And he even encouraged me to handle the rifle in February of 1971.
Okay, so for the bullet remnant, then, I may very well have to go to their pictures or your pictures or whatever.
Our pictures only McDonald has.
Okay. Or their pictures if I can get a hold of them.
If they have any. They claim they don't have any. I wanted their pictures.
Yeah.
I wanted them to take the pictures for me to show McDonald so there would be no question. They wouldn't even do that. And I was leery of taking my own pictures. I had a Mamiya Secor with me
mm-hmm.
because I was afraid of what these characters would later allege, because they were alleging all kinds
sure.
of terrible things.
Well, we as journalists and big establishment organization we are may be able to come in with a ballistic sign and get a hold of either their pictures or be able to take a wrong. It's coming from a different point of view.
I can't tell you what the proprieties
sure.
and legalities are of McDonald letting you have access to ours. But I don't have them. McDonald has them.
Okay, fine. I'll talk to Jim about that, I guess. Huh?
Pardon?
Who do I talk to? To find out the proprieties of that.
I would say
Jim
on
okay.
all of this
okay.
stuff. And then, of course, McDonald has his own professional situation.
Sure.
But I would hope that he would do it. Now, McDonald then... I took McDonald to the
right
clerk
to,
of the
yeah,
court's
okay.
office to
mm-hmm.
examine these two things. And I kept other people occupied so he could examine them carefully without an interruption.
Right.
And he was able to, and he took pictures. And... he's familiar with these kinds of situations, and as soon as he finished, he excused himself to go to the bathroom. And what he did was not to go to the bathroom,
mm-hmm.
but to empty the camera, put a different roll of film in, and wrap the film he had exposed in lead.
Wow.
He's a careful man.
I get it.
These were proper precautions. My room
sure.
was searched down there. I was tailed.
It's not paranoid.
It's
I
not
don't
paranoid.
Think anything
it's not paranoia a bit.
Just,
I can show you carbon copies of some of the surveillance on me.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know he took these precautions until afterwards, and I'm all
yeah.
for them. He was mm-hmm. quite right.
Yeah.
When we left, before he testified, he told me, I wish in most cases I had as clear a specimen as this to testify to.
Mm-hmm.
He then testified in court the next day, and his testimony on this and on the windowsill was not cross-examined. There was no rebuttal. Fraser did not appear to defend his reputation. Jim and I have forced Fraser's resignation.
Okay,
from the FBI.
I know where he's at. You know where he is?
No.
Okay.
But I have in mind calling him up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want him to go on safari to Africa.
Yeah.
I want to depose him.
Mm-hmm.
And in order to avoid him being forced to say anything under oath is the real reason he resigned.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not only in the JFK case.
Yeah.
He's
in the Wallace case too, is he not?
I presume so, yeah. But I know he was in the King case.
Yeah, oh sure. Yeah.
And I've already told you that it's false swearing, and